when you're printing money and rushing to catch up, wages are always the last thing to move. Wages, salaries, they're literally referred, even in shit fiat economics, they are referred to as sticky prices because they are the slowest moving, longest contractual obligations in the economy. Therefore, it's weird and it's a difficult thing to change them. It's extremely easy to change the price of a coffee in 5 hours. Change the price of gas. You can see it happen live. You can pull into the gas station and watch that thing tick up a penny, 2 pennies. Like, they change it immediately. As soon as the commodity changes that they have to purchase, the price of the good changes. Your wages will take a year to catch up to that, at best, if you're lucky. Which means that you are always racing back to zero under inflation, under a fiat system. Whereas literally the exact opposite occurs. Your wages stay where they are for a year while the price ticks down during inflation, which means that you're in a permanently ahead of the game even if you do nothing. What is up, guys? Welcome back to the show. We have got an awesome chat episode today. It's actually a couple of months old, but I had a ton of fun with this one. And if you missed this one on the Bitcoin Infinity show, I went on as a guest with my good friend Knut and Luke, the authors of, Knut, I've done 4 or 5, I don't even know, a bunch of his books now, all of his books, I believe. And he and Luke wrote Bitcoin, the Inverse of Clown World, which I also did the audio for and is also fantastic. And so I went on the show and we talk a bit about the book, but we just kind of go down the rabbit hole discussing a ton of different things. Probably my favorite topic that we got into is the whole give a shit matrix and talking about that concept and Milton Friedman and the idea of the four ways to spend money and how that applies broadly to so many things, how you can use that mental model to understand so much in the world, and how fiat leads to clown world, the connection of technology and sound money to the use and economization of time and resources. And then, of course, we get into JPEGs and ordinals and shitcoins and everything else that you would expect sitting down with Knut, myself, and Luke DeWolf. So I think you guys are really going to enjoy this one if you didn't catch it. Do not forget to grab your Jade Plus hardware wallet. I'm just finishing up my second video so that we can walk through the setup and just kind of show you how to use it and how seamless it is to use it. So if you don't have one yet or you want to grab one, 10% off. Do not forget your 10% off with code Guy. And of course, check out the BitKit mobile wallet. This is a self-custody, on-chain, and Lightning wallet. And honestly, it has one of the cleanest and most intuitive designs that I have for a wallet. I also actually just use BitKit in order to check the Bitcoin price because there's like these cool little peer-to-peer widgets that you can do. You should definitely check out the UX of that wallet because it's really good. And keep an eye out for all of the other things that Synonym is building. They are up to some really cool stuff. All right. With that, let's get into today's episode. This is the voice of Bitcoin. That's me. I was the voice of Bitcoin. I'm not actually calling myself that. I'm not quite that arrogant yet. And it's important to note that this is not I speak for Bitcoin. This is I am the guy's voice that you hear with all of the Bitcoin stuff. The voice of Bitcoin with Knut Svanholm and Luke DeWolf on the Bitcoin Infinity Show.
Guy, welcome to the Bitcoin Infinity Show. Thanks for joining us.
What is up? I still put it as Freedom Footprint in my calendar. And then when I went looking for the email, I again searched for Freedom Footprint. And I was like, shit, where's the link? I kind of panicked for like 4 or 5 minutes. And then I was like, oh, you fucking idiot. It's the Bitcoin Infinity Show.
Yeah, that's the problem with the rebrand. Yeah, what was your original brand, Crypto?
There was the Crypto Economy. It was crypto economy.
Yeah, yeah.
I started that before crypto was like a straight up bad word.
And part of my reasoning, it was becoming that, I was trying to Trojan horse, is that because crypto was like the popular term, I was like, okay, well, maybe I'll get like a bunch of shitcoiners and I'll convert them into Bitcoiners. And then it like slowly got worse and worse. And it was like, crypto was just like gross, more and more gross, like over the next like 2 years. And I was like, man, I think I made the wrong bet. And it wasn't working. It was still just only Bitcoiners listening to the show. I didn't trick anybody.
Fantastic.
And I was like, I gotta get rid of this thing. I gotta drop this shit.
Guy, I mean, it's so good to have you here. We haven't done a pod in ages, which is just weird. You are one of my favorite.
That's weird.
You're one of my favorite people in the whole universe. You've just finished recording with, this is a bit of insider information here. Well, you've just finished recording Bitcoin, the Inverse of Clown World, the audiobook, which is probably out by the time that this pod comes out. So like, yeah, that's absolutely great. I've Hell listened yeah. through it and I absolutely loved it. You've stepped up your game. Everything is better, yeah. even though it was fucking super awesome before.
So, yeah, what are you saying about the last ones, man? You saying I was shitty?
No, I'm not saying you were shitty. I was maybe, like,
but maybe
I didn't. It could get any better, but it could. Like,
Hell yeah.
Then again, I didn't Glad believe I could write Glad any better, but I could. When I got a look to write, but
no, I loved it, dude. Such a good book. Thank you.
But before we go into this. Back and forth about that and about other things. For our listeners that don't know you, why the fuck you wouldn't? Anyway, can you give us the TLDR on the voice of Bitcoin, Mr. Guy Swan?
Yeah, I'm the guy who's read more about Bitcoin than anybody else you know. Went down the rabbit hole in 2011 and literally fell so far so fast that there was never a way to come out. And started the podcast, not to be named, which is now known as Bitcoin Audible, in 2018, March of 2018. And so I'll be coming up on six years. You know, 2024 was 6 years. Oh my God, I'll be coming up on 7 years in 2025. That's coming in March. All right. And also I've started a number of other podcasts just around tech that I've always been a techie guy. And I've read audiobooks of Knut. If you've got any of other Knut's books, I've read all of his audiobooks. They're all great. I've done Broken Money by Lynn, Fiat Standard from Safe, Layered Money with Nick. I mean, just, I think I've got like 15 or 16 now, somewhere in there, getting close to 20. Maybe I'll just stop at 21 just for the hell of it. So I read everything I can get my hands on about Bitcoin, econ, tech, and also have the shows AI Unchained and The Pair Report, and a little bit of, I don't know, I keep saying that it's not dead, but I still have yet to bring another episode back. I think we only have done 9 episodes ever, but Shitcoin Insider. It's never truly dead. There will always be a reason to talk about shitcoins.
Yeah, just like the shitcoins themselves, they never truly die.
So for better or for worse, they're always there.
All right. So, where do we go with this? Like, what have we been up to? Accept this. I mean, you've been given a lot of talks and doing small videos. I've enjoyed them immensely. That little Milton Friedman-y 4 quadrants, others people's money.
I love
that. Yeah, the bullshit matrix.
Yeah. The give a shit matrix, excuse me.
The give a shit matrix. Yeah. How does that work?
Were you going to break down the give a shit matrix right now?
Yeah, why not?
Yeah, so Milton Friedman has this really fantastic, it's so funny how often we get lost in kind of arguing about surface stuff, you know, arguing about kind of the waves in the ocean rather than thinking about the current, like how critical fundamental incentives are and that you can't get around those things. When you screw up the underlying, it does not matter in the slightest what you do on top of it. And one of the most powerful and inescapable underlying principles of how to spend resource, how to use up resources, which is everything that we do. We just use up resources. We are either producing or we produce and then we use it up. And the goal is for those resources to go to the best, the most optimal and most positive use case. How does it produce the most possible value? How do we care the absolute most about how it is being used and like about what we get out of it? What are the results of the use of these resources and how many of the resources does it take to accomplish those results? Those are the two primary concerns that we have always. And everything is scarce. We've run out of all of it. If we don't care about those two things, inevitably we are wasting resources in some form or fashion. Either we're using too many for too crappy of a result, or we have a crappy result and no matter how little we're using, we're still just not getting anything out of it. So Milton Friedman has this great talk, or just kind of an interview that I remember hearing, talking about how we have four different ways to spend money. Is I can spend money that I earned on myself. I can spend money that I earned on you or somebody else. I can spend money that you earned on me, or I can spend money that you earned on somebody else. And the fundamental connection to the costs and the results are different for every one of them. This ultimately creates the bullshit matrix. I mean, the give a shit matrix. Why did I call it bullshit all of a sudden? The give a shit matrix. And so if you put on the X and Y axis, the how much we care about the results and how much we care about how much it costs. When I am spending money on myself, money that I earned, one of the most important things to understand is that money is a weighting system. It is weighing the value of something. And only the money that you earn can you actually feel the weight of. Because it is you who put in the blood, sweat, and tears in order to make that earning. To pull in $300 today. And that $300 is literally your lifeblood. It is your way to interact with the economy, to get your food, to get, you know, save up and get braces for your kids, to have any kind of a break so that you can relax and get your head straight. That is your lifeblood. So when you earn money and then you spend it on yourself, you care absolutely the most about what you get out of it, and you feel every bit of the weight of how much it costs. Because, you know, when you buy a sandwich for yourself, you have to eat the sandwich. You want the best possible sandwich that you can get. And if they're charging you $20 for a sandwich that feels like $10, you're going to be very unhappy because you know how much that $20 weighs.
You mean I'm at the airport?
At the airport, exactly.
Yeah.
Like at the airport. And when I am spending, now when I'm spending my money on you, I still feel all of the weight of the resources that go into it, how much it costs when I buy a $20 sandwich. But I don't really care so much about what it tastes like because I'm not going to taste it. I'm not going to eat it. And there's no way, it doesn't matter how nice of a person I am, doesn't matter how empathetic I am, it's not relevant. It's the sheer fact that it will not go into my lived experience that I cannot feel or care about the result as much as I would with me. It is axiomatic. And in fact, if you are a very empathetic person, it still just means that you care more than other people. It doesn't mean that you care more about what it is when it's you. So I care a lot about the cost, but I don't care so much about the results. You know, if they accidentally put olives on your $10 sandwich, you really just, why not, how about don't bitch about it because I bought it for you, you know? But if you put olives on my $10 sandwich, I'm going to be very, very mad. Then there is spending your money on me. Suddenly the weight of the cost goes down drastically. This is the equivalent of getting the company credit card to go out to eat. You're going to spend a whole lot more time thinking about exactly what you want off of that menu than you are going to be looking at the sidebar with all the numbers on it, right? You're not that worried about the cost, but you're definitely going to make sure that you get something that you want. In fact, you might get a little bit excited because now you can actually get dessert when you usually don't because it costs too much. So you care a lot about the results, but not the cost. Then there is me spending your money on somebody else. I have no connection to the results. I don't have to live in that house. I don't have to eat that sandwich. I don't even have to see the result. In fact, I could just get somebody to write a report for me and have them judge whether or not those results are worthy of my time. Sure, good. There was some number ticked up. Great. We did a great job. And I also don't give a flying F what the cost is because it's not mine. I don't feel the weight of any of it. And all you have to do is casually look, understand every single thing that the government does is in that quadrant. It's in the bottom left quadrant where you do not give a shit about the results and you do not give a shit about the cost. And all you have to do is listen to them to recognize this and then flip it around for you. Imagine if you think about how much, we were trying to buy a vacuum cleaner, and this is when we were kind of stressing balls. We were having a hard time. We weren't making a ton of money, and we needed to buy a vacuum cleaner. And honestly, I'm a little bit. My mother is a clean freak, and she has passed some of this down to me. And so I want a really nice vacuum cleaner that's going to last. I don't want a cheap piece of crap. We literally spent 2 months reading reviews, looking around, just like casually every single day. We put more work into making sure we got a vacuum cleaner, which, mind you, we still have like 15 years later and it works. It is a solid vacuum cleaner. We did a really good job. It was $120. That is the amount of care and concern we put into $120 worth of cost. Now think about how much concern went into a 3,000-page bill that not one piece of shit in Congress even read. Because who the hell can read a 3,000-page bill worth of legal nonsense written by a bunch of lobbyists who are entirely in the quadrant of, I'm going to use your money to spend on me. And then submitted to Congress, forced a vote in a matter of like 2 or 3 days in which the best they can do is skim through and has more zeros than anybody can actually comprehend in the cost. And where Biden gets up in front of a podium and talks about bajillion, trillion, million, billion, like he can't even say the number. It's so big and absurd. And compare that to when it is actually you spending it on yourself, the amount of concern. There is more concern, I promise you, up, down, left, right, fucking sideways. There was more concern in the $120 I spent on my fucking vacuum cleaner than they spent in 3,000 pages that distributed $2.5 trillion to a bunch of corporations and lobbyists. You're talking about a factor of literally trillions in the degree of concern about where that money went, which is mind-boggling. You are looking at a system that literally destroys society trillions of dollars at a time because no one gives a flying fuck what it costs or what you get out of it. And in fact, they are incentivized for it to get worse, for the results to be so shitty that people will demand they do it again. It is better for them for the results to be awful because then they get to say, we didn't have enough money. When that's not the problem at all. The problem is that their entire world exists in the bottom left quadrant of the give a shit matrix.
Absolutely. I beautifully illustrated. It reminds me of, I did some practice at the, what's it called? Like, it was the municipality of the town I grew up in. Mm-hmm. They had like some institution for roads and stuff like that, and for shoveling snow in the winter, like the municipality is taxpayer paid. And one winter it didn't snow at all, so they went under budget by quite a lot. But this is how these things work. Like, what do you think happened? That they got a lower budget? That the people got their money back for their taxes back?
Of course, that makes
sense. No. What happened was that everyone working for the snow shoveling thing got a bonus because of work well done. There was no snow on the streets.
Yeah.
So they made sure that they made their budget, like that they cost enough. Like, optimally, you would want your government funded or no taxpayer funded thing to cost a little more than it did last year, every year. Mm-hmm. Like, it can never cost less because then you get less money.
And it's wild to think about how unbelievably backwards that is, and how people think they're getting a free lunch with the government. You know, if they don't see the bill come to their doorstep, they think that the money has no cost because they fail to recognize that the money has nothing to do with anything. The cost is the resources. Money is just a proxy for resources. It's basically a receipt system. It's a collective receipt system. How do we have a receipt for favors rendered that we can use for redeeming favors later? That's it. I did something for you. You gave me a receipt. And now I have this receipt and I can come back to somebody else and I can redeem him. Government, anytime it prints money or goes into a deficit, is just redeeming receipts. It's just counterfeiting receipts. It's just redeeming all of our favors and all of our resources and all of our time and our houses and our cars and our fuel without ever contributing anything. It's a fake receipt. It's just fraud.
Yeah, it reminds me so much of the one of my favorite analogies about printing money is from the great artists of the 20th century in Southern Europe. So Picasso and Salvador Dali and all of those guys. And there's one incident where Salvador Dali had a car accident. It's in one of the previous books, right?
It's Independence Reimagined?
I think so. The first example, but then I put the other example because I heard of that after I told that story. And he's running into another car and wrecks the other car somewhere in France. And the Frenchman walks out and he's all mad. And what Dali does is that he signs the car wreck, making the car wreck more valuable than the original cost of the car, like the original price of the car that he destroyed, because he's so famous at this point. And apparently these painters, they use that for their restaurant bills. So instead of their restaurant bills, so instead of paying for a meal, they started signing the receipts, and the receipt became more valuable than whatever the dinner cost. Except that they couldn't do it forever because there was inflation in signed receipts. All of a sudden, everyone had Salvador Dali and Picasso signed receipts. So, and it's a perfect metaphor for money printing, right? And also, like, so a couple of things come to mind when you tell the story about the quadrants. One is the famous Margaret Thatcher quote, the problem with socialism is that sooner or later you run out of other people's money, which is alluding to that the resources go away if you don't use them properly. And the other thing is that Bitcoin is at the very, very best point. And it's at the very top corner of this quadrant, right? The very top corner, because it's giving a shit on steroids. You give 100% shit about your money. You don't trust. You verify. You make sure that it's actually yours and it's being spent by you on stuff you wanted to buy.
Yes.
So it's the most give a shit point.
It's the apex of the job that money is supposed to do. But there's actually a feedback system in sound money itself and how money is supposed to work, which is brilliant because it amplifies the giving a shit, even outside of the weight of what it meant to you, because you also have a reflection of the prosperity increase of society, of the productive increase of society reflecting in your money. Therefore, the longer you hold on to it, the deeper the weight is, the more you realize that if you don't use up resources that you don't need to use up right now in 2 years' time, you can actually get access to a lot more resources because society is getting better. So what you actually have is you have two things. You have both the weight of the resources and how much you earned in knowing what the value of it, because you know what you put into it in order to achieve it. But you also have in the back of your mind this incentive to wait because you know the to give it time, because you know that the weight of everyone else's resources are going to increase over time. You know that is going to be a greater portion of the economic pool, or excuse me, it's a greater percentage, the same percentage of a greater economic pool of resources later in the future. And therefore, you benefit also not only from conserving your own resources, but conserving society's resources for the sake of making society better. And you don't have to know. You don't have to know that that's why. But that's why. That's why it's happening. It's incentivizing you to hope or to make a decision in order to make society better for the purposes of making your own life better. It is aligning you in that way. So there's a collective benefit at the exact same time that there's an individual benefit.
Yeah, and that reflection we refer to as number go up.
That is what that reflection is.
And the opposite is true as well. Like, that's why you see empty shelves on supermarkets in countries with price controls, because socialism and other natural disasters don't fail because of a lack of incentives. They fail because of a manipulation of the price signal, first and foremost.
Because of the success of their incentives.
In a way, that's true. But like, the thing is, if you have a gun to your head, and people and some general tells you "vac," you will work. Like, so it's not the incentives; it is the pricing signal. Because if you have no proper pricing mechanism, people don't know what to produce and when and in what quantities. So it's the literal opposite of the number go up technology in Bitcoin. It's not. It's everything go down technology. Like, everything go to shit technology.
Yeah. So, no, I'm glad you enjoy the two sats video series. I haven't had a ton of time to dedicate to it. But I've literally got like 23 of them as far as like projects started for like little ideas. And I'm trying to figure out which one to do next. And it's really hard to break a lot of these ideas down into like 4 minutes, like cohesively. And that's kind of what I'm trying to do, is sub 4 minutes as my goal. If I could get into two, it'd be perfect, but it's unrealistic for a lot of them to really explain it. But I've got one that I want to talk about, because I think it's not really appreciated, is that there's a reason that technology doesn't make our lives better, that technology, think about it in the context of like last 30 or 40 years. Think about the absolutely incredible scale of innovation and drastic changes in our technological landscape. How is it that we don't have more time? We have no more time. We have no more time. In fact, quite the opposite. A lot of people have less time. Technology has gotten drastically better, but all it has done is sped up the economy. It has not freed up the economy at all. And this is explicitly and only because we don't have sound money. Like, this is a mechanism that has nothing to do with technology. Technology is actually doing its job, but what it is actually allowing is for the inflation to be worse. And I don't mean that in the context of like CPI, like price inflation. It's actually a massive deflationary force from the technological standpoint. I mean the amount of inflation that is needed or enabled that would actually keep prices stable. The purpose of technology is that prices are supposed to fall. As things get better and as technology gets better, it's supposed to fall. And if we actually had sound money, we would actually have just gargantuan amounts more time at our disposal. Like, we would have our leisure to make decisions or to change what we want to do. And it wouldn't matter that our job got automated away, because that would be better for us. At the exact same time that it got automated away, what we got paid all year is also 10% more valuable. So you'd be constantly ahead of the game every single time it appeared that there was a fallback. Whereas what we have with inflation, when you're printing money and rushing to catch up, wages are always the last thing to move. Wages, salaries, they're literally referred, even in shit fiat economics, they are referred to as sticky prices, because they are the slowest moving, longest contractual obligations in the economy. Therefore, it's weird and it's a difficult thing to change them. It's extremely easy to change the price of a coffee in 5 hours. Change the price of gas. You can see it happen live. You can pull into the gas station and watch that thing tick up a penny, 2 pennies. Like, they change it immediately. As soon as the commodity changes that they have to purchase, the price of the good changes. Your wages will take a year to catch up to that, at best, if you're lucky. Which means that you are always racing back to zero under inflation, under a fiat system. Whereas literally the exact opposite occurs. Your wages stay where they are for a year while the price ticks down during inflation, which means that you're in a permanently ahead of the game, even if you do nothing, even if you do not change or better your situation, you are benefiting. It's literally the perfect analogy are those stupid sidewalks in the airport. Is fiat is going the wrong way on the sidewalk at all times. And if you stop or do anything, if you're not moving forward, you are literally moving backwards. And you only get to move genuinely forward in space, in a realistic sense, if you are running faster than the moving sidewalk is going the other way. And you also don't know how fast it's going to be moving at any one point in time. It'll just get really fast suddenly and you have to sprint. Whereas Bitcoin, or just sound money in general, is literally on the moving sidewalk that is moving in the direction that you're supposed to be going. So if you are walking forward, you're making real progress. And if you aren't walking forward, you're still making progress because everybody else is, and you get to share it with the foundation of the money. It's so crazy. It literally is the difference between society at each other's throats, competing for resources that are constantly depleting, or society in cooperation and everybody benefiting at the same fucking time. It is the exact same thing that everybody pontificates and gives some bullshit speech about how we're going to make society have everybody work together. And then they do it by slitting each other's throats and putting a gun to your head and stealing all your shit. And it's like, well, if you just stop fucking with everything and putting fraud at the base of the entire system, well, guess what? It would just happen naturally, because turns out Bitcoin points out the obvious, that things are a whole lot better if we just fucking cooperate.
Yeah, I love the passion of the delivery guy. Like, and this is why I love the My Two Sats videos, because of the passion of the delivery of the message, because you can tell that it's heartfelt. And like, this is,
it usually comes with cursing. I have time to bleep it out in my two sets, but,
yeah, we don't fucking curse on this show, man. We don't fucking curse. So the thing is, one of the chapters in the Clown World book, starts by asking the question, and this is very much tied to this whole phenomenon. It asks the question, if you practice doing something over and over again, mm-hmm. do you usually get better at that task or worse at doing that task? And the answer is obvious. Like, for most people, if they practice, worse, they get obviously. Better. Yeah, if I practice playing Beethoven on piano, I might still be shit, but I'm better than I used to be. Like, and this is the thing, the follow-up question to that question that nobody asks themselves is then, why are prices going up then?
Yeah.
Like, because if we practice.
That was a great way to frame it. And it was like in the opening paragraph or whatever, just to set the stage for that whole chapter. Which one was that one? What was that?
It was one of the latter chapters, I think. Yeah. But I think that's the gist of it.
If you want to save in better money and you want 20,000 sats for free right now, it's about $20 at $100,000 of Bitcoin. Check out Fold.
Every time I swipe this card, I get 0.5%, sometimes 1%, sometimes even 1.5%. I can get 2%, 3%, 5%, even 10% on gift cards with major merchants. Between the roundups, the gift cards, the auto stacking, the sats back on every single swipe, Fold literally does all of the work for me, and it is denominated in Bitcoin, and I have more savings just by using this card than like 90% of the United States normal consumer. I've got a referral link for you right here. Shout out to Fold for sponsoring my work and honestly being the most important service for my being on a Bitcoin standard.
So yeah, we're going to take the opportunity, of course, of asking you what you thought about the book and what your main takeaways are and how this differs from my previous books and what's your take on the book?
How does it differ from previous books? That's a good question.
Forget that then. Just your general thoughts.
Well, I'll think on that one. I'll let that one simmer for a minute. Maybe we'll come back to it. I love the book. Obviously love the book. I've always had a thing for your writing. And I love that Luke has been added in on this one to piece this together. And what you said towards the, I think you said this at the end in the postface, if I'm not mistaken, but how like Luke did a good job of giving it structure and putting it together in almost kind of a story fashion, like it, the pieces, the puzzle's probably the better analogy, is the pieces put together really well to end up with a picture. And with the picture that I think you were trying to illustrate really well. But I absolutely love the book. Probably my biggest takeaway, man, it's hard to say because I'm going to mix everything with previous books. It's hard to separate out this one from the entire set of works. But I think going back to the point that you just made about or the analogy that you just made on if you practice at something, does it get better? Why doesn't this result in falling prices? I think one of the best things about this book is how well you've put together, and this is what I've tried really, really hard to do in my two sats videos, and I want to continue to do in my two sats videos, is taking something that's very obvious and attaching it to something very difficult, like very not obvious for most people. And you guys hit that in basically every single chapter, right? Is you start with, this is the simple idea that you know, like you're talking to the readers, like, you know, this is true. You know, this is true. Wouldn't this have to follow? How on earth have we been led to believe that it's the obvious, I mean, that it's the opposite when applied here, when you know this is true? And boiling down to an analogy or that like kind of pinpoint idea that makes that clear, as someone who tries to do that a lot, is very difficult. I know that that is very difficult, or at least it's very difficult for me, and I try really, really hard. So that's probably my biggest takeaway with this book is how well, I've probably got like 7 or 8 like solid highlights from this book that are purple highlights, which I refer to as, I'm going to come back and I'm going to post this somewhere on Twitter probably at some point. I think pretty much every single one of them is an example of something like that, where there's an extremely, like a very obvious or intuitive idea that, when you apply it in the right way to the larger economic idea or the this is what happens in clown world, why would that happen? How could it possibly be that this is naturally occurring, and then breaking down in the rest of the chapter why it's not? Like this, it's just not natural. And what you've missed is that this incredibly important piece of the equation is turned upside down. And I think that is... Which is funny, because what you're doing is you're taking a solid idea or a really foundational idea, and you're flipping it over, and then you're explaining clown world. So it's funny, you're taking the inverse of an obvious idea in order to explain why clown world exists. which is Bitcoin, the inverse of clown world.
Exactly. I mean, I can identify with so much of that. It is very difficult for me to take this simple idea and to mm-hmm. explain a more complicated subject. But I think that's at the core of what all explanatory creative things are, like when mm-hmm. whether it's popular science or anything else, like you have to sort of take it back to first principles and take it back, like take a helicopter view of the problem, like mm-hmm. this is true and this is true, so therefore, and why the fuck is it this way then? Well, it isn't, but yeah. you're pretending it is, like so that's no, I love to hear that. It's great, and it ties back to when you like in the beginning of this show, when you passionately describe the Friedmanish four quadrants, I realized that's the gist of the book. Really, it's
explaining that in a bunch of different ways.
It's the TLDR of our book.
Yeah,
yeah. No, it all comes down to the same. I mean, you can describe Bitcoin in so many ways, and you can describe it in describe the underlying problem in so many ways. But at the end of the day, it's the same underlying problem that we are being stolen from by counterfeiters. And yeah. if we weren't, then we would all be better off and at an ever accelerating pace. Which is what Bitcoin has so blatantly pointed out to everyone who has understood it to mm-hmm. a sufficient degree. And no, that's it.
If I had to say for my biggest takeaway on how it's different from your other works is I think each chapter, with both Sovereignty and through Mathematics and Independence Reimagined. I feel like, because these are more Bitcoin specific rather than the Praxeology book, is you do a good job of hitting like main ideas for each chapter, but I think these are tied together in this way, and this is probably Luke's fault, is these are tied together in a sequence better. Where not only does each chapter cover like the ground of a really strong idea, but each chapter builds on the last one and then consecutively, your final exam is all of them. Like it does a good job of building up as you read rather than having standalone and then just trying to wrap up or something. You know, maybe like that's probably the biggest takeaway on how it's different. Or how it felt different while I was reading it.
Oh, very happy to hear that, because that was the main, like, one of our main goals with this one. It was to make it more coherent. So no, very, very happy to hear that.
I'm glad I got to do the audio, man, as always.
No, I'm super happy you did. Speaking of Bitcoin, more specifically Bitcoin and this give a shit matrix and everything, like, I'm curious to take with you. Your take on the whole spam debate and the attack vectors on Bitcoin and attacks on layer twos and whatever, because for myself, I've become more and more of a monetary maximalist. And I even cringe when I hear this, that they're time stamping the Guatemala election on the time chain. Like, don't do that. This shouldn't be filled with anything arbitrary. Like
I would say that's different because the purpose of the global timestamp server is literally just to have an order of events, like as a chronological history. And explicitly, the entire thing is a hash, which means that basically the transaction isn't even bigger than just a normal transaction. Like the way Simple Proof is working with Carlinhos and everything that they're doing is the most efficient means of getting that value out of it possible. And like literally you're talking about tens of thousands in this tree of hashes that exist in one hash, like, and it is stamped one time. Like that is the only way, and it gives you all of the proof that you could possibly need for anything underneath that. As soon as you start extending this out to things like selling constellations in the sky, which is the equivalent of stamping a picture JPEG into a blockchain and then selling it to somebody like they own it. Like, it becomes so unbelievably both useless, because it doesn't even give the actual capability or the actual utility that it supposedly is selling. Like, it doesn't even exist. You can't own something in the blockchain. It doesn't move with you. You don't transact the JPEG and then put the JPEG somewhere else. You literally, there is no connection to it. It is like selling somebody the moon. Like, just being like, I sold you the moon. You could just as well just say, well, I'm going to do it this way and I'm going to sell you the moon too. Like, you could have somebody else do it. And you're just like, oh, well, I accept this guy's moon. This guy says I own the moon. It's like, well, the other guy says I own the moon. It's like, well, it just exists there. It's on everybody's blockchain. I can look it up on my computer. It's on my node, whether I want it to be there or not. I wish I could delete it.
Yeah, that's the thing. You're not only selling the star in the Andromeda galaxy, you're also forcing people to look at it. Like, you're forcing people to aim their telescopes at that specific star.
You're forcing people to store it for no reason. Like, you're just, it's so nonsensical. The way I still love my analogy, and I haven't heard anybody even in support of it to argue against the analogy, which I find interesting. And I think it's a perfect example is, it's pooping in the park. It's taking a public space and wasting resources and making somebody else have to clean up your shit. That's what it is, in my opinion. Now, in the context of like filtering, like, if you want to filter your mempool or your node and you don't want to include it in your mining blocks, more power to you, 100%. In fact, I'll be, when I turn the miners on for the winter, I'll be pointing it at the ocean pool. So, but at the same time, I don't think there's a concrete way. All you can do is disincentivize, and you can't really stop it, because, you know, the whole idea is, if mining is decentralized, you won't really be able to stop it. If mempool policy is decentralized, you won't really be able to stop it, and it'll get in, and it's whatever, they'll pay fees, and it's not the end of the world. But I mean, I'm with you. I'm a monetary maximalist. It's a global decentralized monetary network. The idea of using it, of cramming. Another analogy, I like the pooping in the park, but I think it also kind of obscures the value of it, because, you know, a park is just a nice place to have. It's not a necessity. Whereas Bitcoin is a necessity. But like sound money is a does society live or die kind of thing on a long enough timeline. And so it's like, imagine is that you had a machine that could feed, that could, in some incredibly unique and perfect way, it could feed people who were hungry. But you have an extremely limited space, an extremely limited capacity for people to move to operate this machinery. But it turns out that if you kind of like flip the machine on its side and run it through like 10 times that would have been for feeding people, somehow you can make a photocopy of your ass, and you can get a printed picture of your ass. And then while people are in line trying to get food, a whole bunch of people crowd in line so that they can get photocopies of their ass from the really important machine. And the ass photocopy is more valuable because it's through this machine that they can prove. And then they brag about, this literally took 10 times as many resources to get this picture of my ass. And then I'm going to sell it because look how I wasted the resources of this incredible, like, monumental machine that we have created. And everybody in line waiting to eat is standing there going, why the fuck am I in line behind this? Why am I waiting to eat because of this dumb piece of shit photocopying his ass? And that's essentially what it does, because this is a global bidding war for space in this machine. And I think to brag, I mean, it's literally you're taking a dump in a park and then you're taking a selfie with it. And then you're being like, look how cool I am. And somebody else has to come by and clean that up, because you clearly, not only are you a poor steward, you're an arrogant poor steward of our collective resources. This is a public good. I mean, in it, as cleanly as I can say it, go fuck yourself. Like, there's nothing I can do about it. And you're still going to go take a picture of you with a shit, but I will do whatever I can to make you feel like a piece of shit, because you are worth less than the piece of shit that you crapped out in the park and then took a selfie with.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. As you say, there's very little one can do on a technical level, except, you know, point your miners at the ocean or something similar, something at least transparent. But I would say the thing we can do is educate people. Mm-hmm. And one of the more important things here is to educate people on why the Satoshi is totally different from anything else on the internet, because it doesn't live on the internet. It doesn't exist on the internet, and it exists in people's heads. At the end of the day, that's where the power of moving the Satoshi resides. So the Satoshi is just a measurement stick. So my analogy is, like, there is no such thing as a rare Satoshi. Just as, like, a centimeter does not become more rare just because I measure my dick with it. And that's what these people are doing. Like, and forcing everyone to look at their dick measurements.
It's about right.
It sounds about right. Yeah.
So that's my take on that.
No, you're American. I mean, inch.
Inch.
You know, by the way, why a penis can never get longer than 12 inches?
I don't know. Luke apparently does.
It becomes a foot.
Yeah, I'd heard this one a few times.
Oh, man, that is dad joke. That's dad joke perfected.
You know, the one thing on this particular front that I think, I mean, I agree about the education is the most important thing here. But what I don't like is when people on Twitter, and I mean, I've pretty much switched off Twitter and gone pretty much. I only scroll Noster these days. And
that's pretty much same. Yeah,
it's been good for my mental health, man. Like, seriously, but just to wrap this up before maybe we switch over to Noster for a bit. The thing is, when there's some people in the Twitter space that basically make fun of anyone who even advocates for doing stuff like what Ocean is doing. Like, it's not going to make any difference. And,
oh, look, filter bros, the fees are low. And it's like, well, no, but that's not the point.
You guys still going to do it.
Exactly. And it's permissionless. And I mean, I love
that. They can feel good about themselves if they want.
Yeah. And then there's been these breakdowns. Like, Bob Burnett has gone and looked at the fees that he took in from comparing, like, an FPPS pool, apparently a couple of FPPS pools, and he didn't name them. He's not naming names. And Ocean. And the Ocean miners paid out more over that period of time. And it wasn't a short period of time either. So it's like, there's something here. Mining pool transparency. I think that is kind of the real issue here. Get everyone out into the open, get everything out into the open, and everything's done in a transparent way. Then maybe we can all put cards on the table. And if you want to go mine your dick butts, like, okay, fine. I'm not going to like you, but it is the system as it exists. And so, yeah. You know, Marathon can go mine an M, and they're allowed to currently. I wish it weren't the case, but since there's basically no alternative than to basically a hard fork, as I understand it, we're stuck with the system. So it's tough.
Not 100% sure there is even like a hard fork fix, because I think it would just kind of change the methodology that would have to be applied in order to get it to work. But I think in a lot of ways, it's just kind of axiomatic that there's going to be ways to, like, because anybody who is making a block can construct the way the transactions go together.
Knut, what are you doing over there?
I'm stamping my seed. Everyone tells me I should. It's good for Bitcoin security and whatnot, and that I should go balls deep into Bitcoin security. So I'm stamping.
But you don't do it like that, Knut. You don't stamp that seed. You stamp your seed phrase.
What?
Your seed phrase.
Oh, so that's what these things are for. all of this stuff that they sent me. Like, oh, I get it now.
That's exactly right, Knut. And you can get everything you need to stamp your seed phrase at stampseed.com. And be sure to check out our limited edition Everything Divided by 21 Million Titanium Seed Plate. And use code INFINITY at checkout for 15% off.
That's fantastic. And it hurts way less.
This show is brought to you by the Bitcoin Advisor, your premier destination for professional Bitcoin management.
Yeah, so if you want help with your Bitcoin inheritance planning or anything like that, you can call us or send us a DM because we're Bitcoin Advisors.
Exactly. They've been serving Bitcoin clients since 2016, and they offer a top-notch Bitcoin concierge service, including collaborative custody and estate planning. We're on the Bitcoin Advisor team ourselves because we believe 100% in what they're doing, and we're happy to tell you more about the Bitcoin Advisor on a call.
So check out thebitcoinadvisor.com or just simply shoot us a DM for some Bitcoin advice. Hey, dear listener, don't forget to like, subscribe, and brush your teeth.
And if you're enjoying the show, the best way you can help us out is spreading the word on your favorite social media platform. Ours is Noster. The show is going Noster first, posting the episodes on Noster one day early. And if you'd like to support the show, the easiest way to do that is to send us a zap on Noster, use a value for value podcasting app to send us a boost, or pick something up from the Bitcoin Infinity store. We appreciate the support.
Yeah, go click like, go click subscribe, and go brush your teeth now.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah.
I think the last point that I had on the sort of the ordinals topic was that there are like two specific bugs that are actually being exploited though, like for some of these things. Like it's this false if thing, like this just complete failure in logic that could just get sewn up, and a lot of this stuff can't happen. And then Stamps is exploiting something else, like this bare multisig thing, and it's so
Stamps is the worst. Because it's explicitly, and what's crazy is that they created it because, like, that was one of the things that, like, really got me, is that they were legitimately bragging about the fact that they found something that is worse. And that was its only value, is that it's kind of like finding out that if you ate a lot of Taco Bell, it's a whole lot harder to clean up the poop out of the park. And it's like, look, I can make diarrhea in the park, and this one's even more difficult, and now I'm going to take a selfie with this one. And the stamps permanently bloat the UTXO set. And there's not really anything to be done about it except for, I mean, I guess at some point, I guess they're identifiable. So maybe you could just prune from your UTXO, like manually prune on the client side, if I'm not mistaken. But regardless, it's the interesting thing about the whole FPPS versus Ocean, and I talked with Mechanic a lot about this, and it's kind of like mind-blowing, is the FPPS is them just like basically apparently giving the bare minimum of what they think they'll have to pay out, and that their spread is a lot bigger than they actually say it is. And Ocean, I think it's a misunderstanding as well to just say that, oh, you use Ocean because you want to filter. No, you use Ocean because you want to be able to choose. It's because you actually want to be able to construct the block template, whereas you're just doing whatever the mining pool wants to do in the other situation. Like Ocean, they've set it up now that you can just choose. You can still mine ordinals. And, well, ordinals is not the thing. You can mine inscriptions and stamps and, you know, whatever. If you want, they have a filter for you. Like, they're not even, if you want to use theirs, the default filter or the default template is with the filter. They're not even telling you that you can't or for enforcing it on anybody. They're literally just trying to decentralize this process so that people can choose, because they think if people can choose, most will choose to, shockingly, most will choose to do the filters. And the surprising fact of that is that you still end up making a higher payout with Ocean, because Ocean just isn't trying to screw you. The payouts are just probabilistic. They're based on the mining itself, and it's more random, but it ends up being a significant, like some of the stats, even for as small as they still are, to the point that he said he was talking to and I think he mentioned this in the first round table, maybe,
But he was talking to a miner who is using them, a larger miner who is using them. And he asked, he's like, well, could you share this publicly or whatever? Because they were making a pretty significant percentage above what they were making with the others. He says, would you, you know, be willing to share this out? And he said, sorry, but no, I don't want to tell other people because the gap will probably go away. Like, says, I'm making more because other people don't know about this right now. So I don't really have any good reason to spread the word on the fact that I have X percent more by using this. And he said, you know, for the sake of privacy, I don't want to tell who that is. That's an interesting point. So, but I'll be turning my miners to, I mean, I've set up with Ocean, whatever. It's just been too damn hot to run the things in the house.
This is so damn interesting. Like, from so many perspectives, I guess the devil's advocate thing on the stamps would be that Bitcoin thrives when attacked. Like, we should attack it from all sorts of vectors and let's see what happens. So maybe this is the price we have to pay to get to a point of
decentralized block templates.
Yeah,
that would be great.
Exactly. Yeah. And maybe the trade-off is worth, only time can tell, you know. But it's also the thing, one thing that has bothered me when thinking about the game theory and attack vectors and such, is that you have this among Bitcoiners that we're all incentivized we're not incentivized to be violent, to aggressive against one another, because when you cannot know how many Bitcoins another person has, like, it's impossible. And therefore, attacking that person is always the worst choice, that if you have to choose between that and providing something of value back. So you extract the Bitcoin by providing value back. So that's how it's so beautiful and promotes world peace and stuff. But it's not true for miners. Miners actually have an incentive, to, at least theoretically, to attack one another. And this is like, am I getting this wrong? Is there a game theoretical thing here that I'm missing? Or are miners incentivized to, you know, covertly attack one another, blow up, go into someone else's mining facility in a ninja suit and blow it up and blame the third miner? Like, what's guys' take?
I mean, yeah, probably. Yeah, because miners are not in competition with the network. They are incentivized to protect the network because the network defends and owns their payout or, you know, creates the rules and the value of how they get compensated. But they are in competition with each other in a zero-sum game where the output versus the input is explicitly limited and is purely competitive, which is exactly why it is critical for the ecosystem or the mining function itself to be as purely open as possible and as purely probabilistic as possible, that there is no, you know, MEV advantage or out of band like gaming of the system that can be done with how you order transactions or in reordering transactions that have already been ordered, et cetera, where you can make more money on. And this is why, you know, expressivity in Bitcoin is actually a potential and pretty significant risk, is that more capital could be made, or a significant portion of the capital could be made in just altering how transactions get into Bitcoin, rather than just kind of the very naive assumption of grab the thing with the most fee and stick it in the top of your block, you know? And I actually just read a piece called Stop Calling It MEV by Matt Corallo, which I think does a good job of breaking down the concept, but it is very obscure. It's still really hard to kind of like pin down exactly what is meant. And I think the best thing is just to use Ethereum as a comparison. And one of the things that got me about Ethereum, I didn't believe it to the point, like, I thought it was just FUD from Bitcoiners that was exaggerated, because, you know, it's easy to just like make up something that's really bad about Ethereum because Ethereum is garbage. The whole thing started as a scam. But I wanted to temper it and be like, no, there's no way this is true. This is like actually how it works. But staking is permissioned. And I don't think people realize that, is that the current stakers have to allow you in. Like, which is so fundamental. Like, I don't know how they could possibly call that decentralized. Like, if I am mining in my basement, I don't have to get somebody else to validate that those hashes are real. You know, like that's one of the most like core fundamental pieces of the entire puzzle of this being a global permissionless system. But not only do you have to have like, what is it, 32,000 is some crazy amount of Ethereum to stake at all, but you can't just like turn it on. You have to get all of, and you just have to assume that all of the other stakers are going to be like, yeah, sure. In a zero sum competitive environment, they're going to add you to the mix. They're going to dilute their portion of it by adding a new staker. And that's never going to go sideways. That'll never work out. No, that'll never go bad. I couldn't believe it. I could not believe it. I still want to think that I'm wrong, but nobody's contested me on that.
It sounds like politics, like political
very much so.
The nation. And it sounds like at least with a bank, you and the bank and the government are in a 2 out of 3 multisig situation, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if you and the bank decide that the money is yours, then well, I guess the government could shut you down anyway. But if
I was
if
about
the
to say it's a 2 out of 3 with a one with a master key. So the government, there is a 2 out of 3 relationship, but there is also a backdoor key from the government that can basically nix all of it. So it's kind of like a hierarchy of keys, and it's mostly an abstracted 2 out of 3 that doesn't really exist. But I see what you mean. I see what you mean.
But it's still better than Ethereum. That's where I'm getting.
But it's still better than Ethereum.
Yeah.
That's funny.
Yeah, so Ethereum is shit cubed.
Yeah. I still just can't get past the 70% pre-mine. I can't believe
so many people fucking fell for it and for such a long time, and people still fall for it. Like they still think there's some value in that.
And you know, so like people in Ethereum were like, nobody cares about that anymore. And it's like, I don't care if nobody cares about that anymore.
Like, yeah, that's the problem.
Do you not understand? That doesn't change the reality. That doesn't change what it means. That's like saying nobody cares about fiat money. Well, of course they don't, because they don't fucking understand it. But it still has consequences. It still means what it means. You could, like it's such an appeal to, it's like a bandwagon appeal. It's like, well, nobody cares. It's like if we all lived in a giant building and the entire floor was the bottom floor in the foundation was just chock full of termites, but everything seemed fine. And everybody's going around the building, it's like no big deal. And then I'd be like, dude, this whole thing is literally going to collapse. Like this thing is just chock, like the joists are rotten. This whole thing is going to fall and everybody's going to die. And you're like, well, we took a poll and nobody cares. Like, it doesn't fucking mean anything. Like, that doesn't change anything about what I said. Answer the problem, you know? Like, holy crap. Like, how stupid, how completely irrelevant could you be? Who gives a shit about how many people give a shit about it? You have a 70% pre-mine in a system that has now gone proof of stake, which means they own the whole thing before anything ever got started, before anybody was ever able to utilize or do anything with it. There was a private sale of 70% of the tokens that are still in basically the starting crew's pockets, and they remain there, and then they moved it to proof of stake where they get to order all of the transactions and build all the blocks and have say over what the rules are. If nobody understands that in your Ethereum, that's not a good thing. That's not a defense of it. That's just showing how bad it is and how stupid everybody is about what decentralization means and why any of this exists in the first place. On top of the fact that, by the way, we made it permissioned so that if you don't get our approval, you don't even get to play the game. Just holy wow. It's just absolutely mind-boggling sometimes. Nobody cares. Like, what the fuck?
But are there any shitcoiners left? I mean, of course there are scammers left that try to do shitcoins on Bitcoin and whatever and the other scams.
Yeah.
But like the pure shitcoiner, like back in 2017, when I've started this token, blah, blah, blah. Does that still happen? I mean, I very rarely see them anymore. I see a lot of bots and people with ETH in their Twitter handles and stuff. But that's mainly bots, I think. Like, but
there's a bunch of ETH devoutists still. And there's a handful of explicit coins that... mostly from like some utility mindset, failing to recognize that these are all monetary instruments and this is the only thing that they can be. And the idea of a utility token is nonsense. And you're not going to get away with, oh, my single utility is going to outcompete the base case of money and trust, because that's not how any of this works, but it's okay. Ignorance is the norm.
No, the utility is in an Excel sheet, like a spreadsheet.
Yeah.
And you don't need all the other stuff. Yeah, yeah.
But Ethereum, granted, I haven't done like a deep dive. Like there were times where I tried to spend a couple of weeks like really digging into and trying to like sushi swap stuff just for the sake of exploring, mostly as shitcoin insider homework. But I haven't done it in a really long time, but it does seem that a strong base of the quote unquote community is still there. But external to that, and I think we're seeing so much of the fervor die down because, I mean, at the end of the day, there's two major problems. There's two major problems with the shitcoin casino world. Is one is that the fundamental utility token thesis is self-defeating. So the most foundational and the most widespread mentality was diversify. Is that we need to, some of these other things might have value or this might have some single utility. And so they split it up among the most prominent of the cryptos, and they hold Bitcoin too. Whereas the Bitcoin philosophy was always, the strongest foundation of the Bitcoin philosophy was Bitcoin only, this is changing sound money and it makes no sense to have anything else. From just that standpoint, you can deduce that Bitcoin wins. Because inevitably, crypto is spreading itself thin, and Bitcoin is staying, like, there are way, 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 way more Bitcoiners who hold no shitcoins, no tokens whatsoever, and only hold Bitcoin than there are ETH, Monero, Litecoin, whatever, who hold only those coins and don't hold Bitcoin. All of the token holders, like 99% of the token holders, hold Bitcoin. Whereas the reverse is not true. And in fact, everybody who is even holding ETH because it's got smart contracts is also holding Solana, which means the economic network effects are inevitably in Bitcoin's favor. And they are still aligned with Bitcoin because they are still going to hold Bitcoin because Bitcoin is going to continue to succeed. That is the monetary network effects. That is the problem of, or the extreme condition of value being exclusive, that you cannot hold value in two things at the exact same time. It is always a trade-off of which one is the better hold of value, which means that the monetary good that is the best at monetary trust and as a monetary foundation is just going to win and all the other ones are going to trend towards zero.
Yeah, it's like utility value is like holding McDonald's coupons instead of holding dollars. Like, And pretending that they will be more valuable in the long run.
Yeah, and then the other major disconnect is the fact that, you know, we were all like smart contracts and we're going to be able to design everything. We're going to be able to put everything on the blockchain and all this stuff. And then it turns out that the
like 90% of the value of every bit of this stuff was just in a shitcoin casino. It was, you know, it's like they've got like 30 different decentralized exchanges. And what do all of those decentralized exchanges do? They just trade, they just swap shitcoins, which means that of all the utility tokens, essentially the core underlying utility of all of these things was just to gamble and trade between them all. And there has been no other strong, like genuine market staying power for any other use case. Like, you know, you got like NFTs and stuff, and they're like a blip in the pan for like 2 months, and then they trail off and nobody really cares about it. And like some people spent like millions of dollars on a stupid monkey picture and now they're going for like $200. You know, I mean, like talk about like 99.999% collapse in a lot of this stuff. It exists purely in the hype cycle, and then it falls to the 1/100th, 1/1000th of a market that it actually appeared to be, which is the market that it actually is. Which means that the only thing that keeps up the utility tokens of the quote-unquote smart contracts is the hype cycles of the random shitcoins and utility tokens. And so if you don't have another massive hype cycle, there's no reason for your decentralized swapping all over the place. Because you can't swap anything of real value. You're not swapping, you're not paying for cars and you're not paying for like real things in the real world. You're swapping sushi token for Doge token and Ethereum and Solana.
Speaking of swapping, Sushi Swap sounds like a good name for a swingers club, don't you think?
Hey, that's not a bad idea.
No.
I think you're onto something. I think you're onto something. Is that one of your pastimes?
If it was, it would probably be kept a secret, yes.
I would talk about it less, not more.
Yeah. One of the funny things about kind of talking about shitcoins generally, ETH, all this stuff, it feels weird to even say it. It's like you go down the rabbit hole and you go like all the way maxi and everything. And it's just like you stop thinking about this stuff after a certain point. And I mean, it like I'm remembering my journey down the rabbit hole and how I became fully convinced. And I mean, like I went from watching the Sailor series and on Breedlove and like that got me, that convinced me about Bitcoin. But I still had my portfolio of shitcoins for a while. I was only acquiring Bitcoin, but I still couldn't get over little things like the proof of stake thing or the mining or whatever it is. I just couldn't get over it. Diversification, as we say, like it's a hard process, I think, actually going down the rabbit hole and completely avoiding all of the crypto stuff. But like I think one thing to remember is it's still super important. Across the world, there are tons of people. There's way more people who think about crypto and think it's just a thing to invest in and don't even give it a second thought.
Yeah.
Then there are people.
It's just another thing in the stock market, basically. Yeah.
Exactly. And so I mean, I think educating people is still really important. And so I mean,
we'll still have a few cycles, I think.
Yeah.
We'll still have a few cycles.
It's tough to go there, but I think we need to. Bitcoin maxis need to be able to go there and say, yeah, this is why this is actually different. The mechanism of just sort of ignoring it all, like completely walling off from the crypto ecosystem, that's good in one sense, and being like totally toxic and not letting any of that creep into Bitcoin, of course. But it also does create this echo chamber where maybe the voice of Bitcoin doesn't actually make it out into the wider consciousness. And I think this is something that Bitcoin is going to need to improve on as we go to reach more people in a more timely manner.
No, I totally agree. It comes off more, and I think it's used like that in the community. Like, you know, as much as, like, I would never talk to people in the crypto space to the degree that I've had this conversation here. I've been very, very mean, you know, in the sense of if I was talking to somebody who was highly involved in it. But the arguments are, like, I think just presenting the argument, it comes off as way, way too defensive to, and I think we've gone through this era of thinking that because we think something is
a scam or nonsense, that there's been this whole thing of like, don't platform these people and like, don't. And I'm just like, stop caring so much. Stop caring so much. And I've gotten to the point where I just don't, you know, like I'll give my opinion and I won't hold back. But I also have no problem talking to somebody in crypto or going on their show or going, if I got invited to a crypto conference, I'd be pretty stoked. I'd be like, well, here's an audience that actually really, really needs to hear this, you know? And I have absolutely nothing against that. And I also have no bad blood. I as much as I will say ETH is an absolute scam and it is nonsense. And there are huge problems that are way more fundamental than whether or not your layer two rollups are working or not. I don't care about your layer two if your layer one is dog shit. But that aside, is like, I'm not like, I held shitcoins, you know, I traded shitcoins for like a long time. I was certain I was going to make more Bitcoin in the 2017 like hype cycle, like the real hype cycle for this. And it was wild. I actually had a shitcoin play that went so well for a span. And then I watched it die. And I've learned my lesson and I lost my Bitcoin. And I realized, I identify the excuses I was giving myself for, I cannot believe I didn't take out my principal. I cannot believe I didn't take, God bless, it's so awful. But, you know, hindsight, hindsight's 2010. That's not 2020. It's like, it's way better than that. But how could I possibly fault somebody else if I did it? You know what I mean? Like, and I think part of it's, you know, wanting to judge yourself. It's like, I want to be mad at me from 2017, but I learned like a lot of really great lessons from that. And I don't want to be overly defensive or like, I just don't care anymore. And I also, as much as I'll explain to people who need to hear it or that I think need to hear it, I also find that just most people learn through time and most people learn the hard way. And it's just like, all right, you know, we'll really learn it if we all learn it the hard way. So I'll just leave the hard way on the table and I won't. And if you're just going to get mad at me because I told you not to do it, be my guest. Be my guest. And I'll just keep putting out episodes. And if you ever want to come back and, you know, maybe you'll just be butthurt forever. And you know, you'll always just permanently lose money, but that's up to you. Do you want to learn? Do you want to take a lesson from it and actually change something? Or do you want to just write a book about how everybody else is wrong and, you know, and just be infinitely butthurt about it and convinced that the only reason that you didn't succeed or that your shitcoin didn't succeed is because everybody else doesn't understand it and the whole world is wrong, not me.
The fact that Noster exists now is a very good thing from a perspective that few understand. And this is that all of these young 180 IQ programmers who sit in their basements and worry about things like rollups not working on layer two on some, they can now develop Noster things instead of spending their time and energy on fucking shitcoin stuff. Because
how
there's
many,
so many,
how many decentralized
you know the
social
type,
media
right?
Shitcoins were there? How many?
Yeah, I don't know, but there was a Steam
like
was one, right? Like
Steam? Was, Steam it?
Yeah. Yeah. It's awful. And I think that had like a double token, so you had to have one token to get the other or something.
Yeah,
it's really
something
bizarre.
Like that. And was that the one that had the hostile takeover from Tron, from Justin Sun? Was that Steam?
I don't remember. I don't know,
but he went and he like bought up like more than half of it and then basically just like dominated the whole thing, which was hilarious.
You sure it wasn't Don't Quan?
Don't Quan. It was Justin Suntron. It was Justin Suntron. I'm pretty sure that's who it was. I think it was Steemit. I'll have to look that up.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
But you know the type, right? Super nerd that is extremely intelligent in one specific field, usually programming. And doesn't care about networking. It doesn't care about economics. And there's a lot of those. There were a lot of those that fell for the Ether thing and started like going deep into, oh, this is a challenge. I need to program this stuff, not realizing that it's a castle made of sand, that it's built on nothing. It's a giant nothing burger. And what they're serving with the nothing burger is code salad. You know, it's nothing.
Code salad. Oh, it is truly the impossible burger of Bitcoin steak.
Impossible Whopper, yes.
Yeah. But yeah, I agree with Luke on that, is that it was a dumb strategy, and it makes Bitcoiners look weak to just, it makes it look like they care too much about shitcoins as opposed to not at all. You know, it's like it literally treats them like they're a threat, you know, is to be like, you don't you ever talk to them, and don't you ever do this. You're just like, I can't believe you're a shitcoiner. You're banished forever and all this stuff. And it's just like, why do you care so much? Why do you care so much? Just stop caring. Then like, everything's going great in Bitcoin. I've been zapping people on Noster 10 times a day. I got 10 different Lightning wallets that all do different things. Bolt 12 just got implemented, like, officially. So now we got subscriptions, pay as you go. We got offers and stuff built in. You can have a permanent, like, quote unquote, address or a permanent invoice that other people can use to make invoices to pay you, so that you can just post it like a Bitcoin address. You can now have a quote unquote Lightning address that's not custodial. And that's just on Lightning, and Lightning's been killing it. Like, I use it. It's my main mode of pay. I do so many different transactions. I've been on a Bitcoin standard for a couple of years now, where slowly transitioning to a everything comes in Bitcoin. And then, you know, I use the dollar as my main payment network. And things are going good. And Bitcoin's up. We're, you know, all-time highs pretty much. Chilling around $60,000, no big deal. 58K gang for life.
No, it's great. Just a final point on the giving a platform to shitcoiners and stuff. The thing I think we shouldn't stop doing, though, is calling out bullshit and being toxic. Point out when someone else is giving a platform to an obvious scammer. Pointing out when there's a manufactured debate about something that shouldn't be a debate at all. Like, it's like what public service news media outlets do all the time. They create a debate about something that is missing the underlying problem, and it's not addressing the interesting stuff, but they're making it seem like this arbitrary bullshit is what we ought to be talking about. But ironically enough, that's what we spent some part of this conversation talking about, you know, shitcoins on Bitcoin and the ordinals on stamps and shitcoins. Like, but that whole debate is a nothing burger in itself. It's manufactured. And it's that expression where don't ever wrestle with a pig, because you both get dirty and the pig likes it.
Yeah.
That's the thing. We're wrestling with pigs. So, like, what I do mostly is just ignore shitcoiners and point out, and like try to educate and try to stay toxic, but without calling out names. I don't think you should like give people free promotion by engaging in debate if you can avoid it. But what you can attack, though, is the bad ideas, and you can point out how bad the bad ideas are.
Yeah, if you debate from the principle. Debate from the foundation, like, because that's the only, otherwise you're arguing within their framing. Argue within the Bitcoin frame. Like don't give them the assumption that their foundation is accurate. Argue the foundation, or you're not actually arguing the principle. This is what I see with economics all the time, is that, you know, they'll argue about like aggregate demand and GDP, when like if you actually have an Austrian foundation, you're like, GDP is bullshit. Like your metric, the statistic you are using doesn't even apply. So I don't really care what GDP is different now than. Like, GDP is just going to go up if you print a ton of money and the economy doesn't collapse.
Like, that's it. Like, but GDP is a far better measure of just like the amount of money that's been flooded in the economy. And the only time that it actually goes down is when it's so bad and you've created such a terrible credit crisis that it has to unravel and you literally have to delete trillions of dollars through a default through a credit crisis. So it's whether or not it's either going up because you printed a whole lot of money or it's going down because you caused a credit crisis. That's it. Like that's what GDP measures. So if you are arguing in the frame of GDP as a measure of like the health of the economy, you've already lost because you're not actually arguing the point. And in kind of a similar vein is, you know, and I completely agree that like, I think a lot of people get confused with engaging and quote unquote being polite or being like just talking to them without being like, you're half an idiot is like not being solid about your point. It's just like somehow this is like pulling punches or something. Is it you're giving them something when there's nothing about, I think people conflate being nice with lying. I think a lot of people do that, is that the way to be nice is to just bullshit somebody. It's to just be like, oh yeah, no, your project's great. And I'm being nice and I'm being polite. Everything's great. Ethereum's going to go awesome, man. I swear. It's like, no, just tell them the truth. That's the only way to be nice anyway. You don't have to pull your punches in what you think or your argument to not just attack them as a person or whatever. And your argument's 1,000 times stronger if you manage to avoid that anyway, because you're just staying on point. Just stay on point. Just argue. If you want to debate with somebody, just argue the point. Don't accept their frame and don't call them a piece of trash just because they made a mistake. You did too. You held shit coins. You know you did. You know you did it.
$10. That's my track record of shit coins.
I held some shit coins for a little bit there.
But anyway, like,
so embarrassing.
Politeness is at the very core of why wokeism is a thing, I think, because it comes from a place of trying to be polite to one another. And this over politeness and confusing, as you say, confusing being nice with
lying.
With lying.
Just making stuff up.
Yeah. And you
it's like one of those things,
like,
that insecure guys think that they have to lie about what they like to women to make women like them.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, oh, I love Taylor Swift. It's like, I love Taylor Swift too. It's like, you're manipulating them. Like, you're not being nice. You're lying to them to get them to like you. That's what a creep does. If you don't like Taylor Swift, be like, why do you like Taylor Swift? She's awful. And it's actually a much more interesting conversation too. And if she can't handle it because she's a delicate little nothing, why would you want to be with that woman? Like, just go off, like, value yourself and be honest. Like, you're doing the same thing that it's just a mess. Like, we literally have this weird culture that has slowly grown up in the last 30 years where living a permanent life of white lies is somehow being nice to people or good or something. Like, stop putting a mask on. Man up. Pull your britches up and just tell people what you think. Actually like the things that you like. And stop making shit up because you want somebody else's approval. I don't like Taylor Swift. That's not true. There's a couple songs that are kind of like, they hit.
I find her fascinating. Let's just say that.
She didn't write any of that stuff anyway. So it's not Taylor Swift. It's just whoever the songwriter is that she purchased it from.
Guy, this has been an awesome conversation. I wish we could go on for 2 more hours, but unfortunately we're a bit tight on time here. So I think we're going to wrap it up here soon, or if not now. So thanks again on the audiobook. It should be out by the time that this episode comes out. So make sure everyone that you check out the audio version of Bitcoin, the Inverse of Clown World, read by the one and only Guy Swan, and you can change the speed if you want.
I try to get it slow. So if somebody, I do actually try to get it like slow and steady, because I know there are like non-native English speakers who listen to it. I don't want them to have to manually slow it down. And I know everybody goes on 1.5, 2x anyway. So definitely do speed it up.
if you're...
I noticed and I thought it was absolutely brilliant. Like, I really
appreciate
like that. That's clever.
Like, appreciate that rather clever. Than saying it's like, oh, he talks really slow, like he's stupid.
No. It's perfectly read. So and check out all the other stuff. Check out Bitcoin Audible. And where else would you like to send our listeners?
Just, you can find me on Noster. That's where I do most of my stuff. And on Keet, if you join any of the Keet rooms, I'm in like 90. Now it's like really retarded. So, there's no way you don't bump into me on Keet if you just start exploring. And that's where I spend two most maximum amounts of time is hanging out on Noster and, hanging out. Like all my work stuff is in Keet. So I'm there in those groups quite a bit back and forth. And you can DM me on Twitter. I still answer my DMs. Like I don't post, like I don't do comments or whatever. I'll just like post episode stuff typically on Twitter and content, but I can still be reached there. And it is still one of my biggest networks for access to other people. So feel free to DM me. I might be slow about getting back and I apologize. But otherwise check out the show, Bitcoin Audible, AI Unchained. If you're interested in all the AI stuff, I really go down that rabbit hole pretty serious. And also its connection to like the open source world of AI specifically and how it's connected to Bitcoin. And then also the Pear Report, which is all about the Pear Stack, which is what Keet and it's the Pear Stack and a little bit Noster. Like it's got like a foot in the Noster door too, because I think these are deeply related and I think they have a lot, they're going to have a lot to do with each other as things move forward.
That's super good to hear because, we talked to Paolo and Matias about Keet, and one question was like, what's the connection to Noster? And it seems like a no-brainer that the two would work together, but let's see.
Interesting. I'll tell you my easy framing on this is that Noster actually doesn't have anything to do with relays. Relays are just the default lowest hanging fruit for how to get information from one user to another. There's no reason why it can't be Nosters and Pears. Like it can't be like notes. The notes and the other stuff is a generic signing and publishing protocol with keys. And like that, you can basically deliver anything over the internet that you want. Relays are the simple means, the simplest tool for getting signed message from A to B. But you can do that over the Pear Stack too, without changing anything else about Noster. The whole protocol can work exactly the same. And rather than using a relay address, you can use a pair address. And you can do this across peers. So there is not, I think they are separate layers in a general sense. Noster is a signing, authentication, and basically a directory of people and their keys and built with like a social media system. And the Pear Stack is a communication standard. It is more about, are we going to use relays? Are we going to use the Pear Stack? Are we going to use TCP/IP and do a web server? Like it's in that stack of the stuff, but the rest of Noster is actually not part of that. The rest of Noster is on top. So that's just my reasoning for why I think these are not really competing with each other, and that they are both going to be a very important part of the new stack, if you will.
That's your two sets.
That's just my two sets.
So anyway, anywhere you want to send our like, or was that the answer?
That was it. I think we got the whole list. I think we got it. Yeah. Check out those shows. AI Unchained, Pair Report, Bitcoin Audible.
Awesome. Check out all the things, do all the things.
Guy, thanks so much for this. It's been awesome to chat with you. It's been a long time coming. We'll have to do this more often. So
for sure, man. Good to officially meet you, I guess.
100%.
Since I didn't know. I didn't even realize. It's good to meet you.
Man. Yeah. Likewise. So hey, this has been the Bitcoin Affinity Show. Thank you very much for listening.
Take it easy.
You know, this episode was only an hour and a half, and I feel like we could have done better. I hope you guys enjoyed that episode. Always fun to hang out with Knut and Luke, and it was actually awesome. I got to see them in Lugano. I don't get over across the other side of the pond a whole lot, so it's really nice to actually be able to catch up with them. And if you have not checked out their book yet, if you are a lover of any Bitcoin books, Knut is a fantastic author, and the book that they put together, The Inverse of Clown World, ranks pretty high in the list of Bitcoin books to read that are just really fun. It's called Bitcoin, The Inverse of Clown World, and I feel like that kind of gives you an idea of what you're going to get. So thank you guys for listening. Do not forget to subscribe. Do not forget to share this out. This show lives because you guys share it out with other people. You value the conversations, the reads, the takes, and all of that good stuff. And I've got another really good one. I know it's been a little bit since I've talked about AI stuff, but that is actually coming pretty soon. And I'm going to have a guy's take because there is a lot to update in the whole AI sphere. And so I'm eager to get into that because that's going to be a hefty episode. There's a lot to cover. But thank you all so much for zapping on Noster, for streaming sats on Fountain and sending me boosts. If you want to support this show, the best way is to just share it out. But also, if you are getting yourself a Jade Plus, don't forget to use my discount because not only does that help out the show, but it also makes sure that you get 10% off. Do not buy things without discounts. There are discounts everywhere, especially Bitcoin things. Come to me. And then check out the BitKit wallet. This is a non-custodial, on-chain, and Lightning mobile wallet. It has an awesome setup and design and access to their LSP built right in, so there's no real setup or hassle to Lightning. For some reason, you seem to have trouble with Lightning. You should have turned your VPN on for security and privacy anyway, and maybe pointed to a country like Switzerland or something. I don't know. Is that what Guy does? That's what Guy does. Check them out. Links and details in the show notes, and I will catch you on the next episode of Bitcoin Audible. And until then, everybody, take it easy, guys.